Welcome to Intensive Learning Workshop number 4, Children's Ministry Revitalized for Today's Kid Ministry. And this is the session, Getting Parents into the Game, and I'm Roger Timer. I'm very happy to be with you for this last session of the day. And this may be the session that has the greatest discipleship impact. Simply said, who's got the greatest discipleship impact on kids?
Parents.
That's not just because we made it up that way. That's the way God designed it. So we're going to be talking about faith at home in this session. And the opening question is for us to discuss. A memory during my childhood when my parents talked with me about God was when? I'd like you to recall a memory from your childhood. And would you please share it with your one other partner? And now, this may require, by the way, if we have some people that are in twos or in threes, it might be better to even try to find someone else so that we're in partners there, too. Or if you can just go to three, that'd be fine, too. But just know that you only have so much time on this. Now, think about that. Now, if you grew up where you did not grow up in a Christian home or a godly home, and that's a certain percentage of us here, still, there were conversations about God. It still happened, even if it was negative or even if it was conspicuously not talked about. So that's another part of your story that you're sharing. So would you please now share with your partner? If you would kindly wrap up your conversation in these next few seconds. I hope that as you were talking about that experience, it did something to your heart. I hope that it stirred a bit, because this is a reminder of how important it is to have those significant, not just conversations in the home, but experiences. It's vital to the faith formation, though we can certainly come to faith apart from having grown up in a Christian home. But for a Christian home, it's vital. Here's the tragic percentage. Amongst Bible-believing evangelical churches, typically, fewer than 10% of the families that are attenders talk about God in the home with any kind of intentionality. Why? That's my question. Why? Pretty important question. What do you think? Now we're kind of speculating.
I would just say time. Not having enough time.
I would say that's exactly what most people say when I ask the question. But what did we learn today? Yes, it's not a question of time, it's a question of priority. We've been hoodwinked, because how many hours of television do they watch? Boy, now that's scary. That's interesting. And I'm wondering, does it become more real when they're talking about it, or does it have to become real and then they talk about it? I think the answer is yes.
Sometimes don't know where to go with it. Where do I even start, right? And how do I find a meaningful way and still,
For me, this...
Thank you.
I think over time, priorities have changed lives, and if God is put first...
Thank you.
I think a little bit... drop it off mentality, where
And that was very much the case when I was growing up.
Who is usually the spiritual leader in the house, mom or dad? Mom. Right. Do you think dads are afraid? Yes, absolutely.
The church has done a disservice to families.
I think that in our culture we're drifting because we have such...
An interesting question is, what are the times of which a church-going family will gather together and talk or pray that typically don't? There's an interesting question. Are there certain needs that come up that they say, yes, we will talk about it? Or have they been so used to not talking about it when someone has cancer in the family that they're not capable of praying together?
I think in our culture, too, we have such a high degree of tolerance, or you don't want to offend people. For older children, like teens, I have a teenage daughter. When they have been schooled in their school systems, they're taught acceptance of all these things that we know as sin. So I think some people don't want to cause conflict in their home, and so they kind of taught in school, kind of. I think some of that.
Wow. One of the most important discipleship topics you can have is sex. And look at the different message that they get from the world. Wow. Okay. What we want to do, per someone's point over here, is we want to change the culture of our church. We do not want to add another program. We want to change the way we are thinking as leaders. More importantly, not just us, but the parents and the whole church, and particularly the leaders, and particularly, folks, the pastor. Because he's got to come on board with a shift for you to change the entire culture of your church in this way. We'll talk about how we get to that in just a minute. Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 4 through 9. Is the sedes doctrina of this, the seat of doctrine. And as you have described some of the challenges that we've had, you've also have somewhat described what you think it might look like. How close is that to Deuteronomy chapter 6, beginning at verse 4? These words are familiar to what we read earlier, quoted out of Mark 12. From Jesus. These are the commands, by the way, the Lord has commanded that this is what you would follow. Verse 1. Now verse 4. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength. These commands that I give you today are to be upon your hearts. Impress them on your children. Impress them on your children. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, and even when you're in the minivan. When you lie down and when you get up, tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads. Let it be part of your life. Write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates. And if we look at the Hebrew here, he is saying not just to parents, but he's saying to all the families in the family of God, the Hebrew people, this is how you do it. So, what would we say to our culture of churches? I am suggesting that for us to change the culture and for it to reflect this, we need to give our churches three things. We need to give our parents three things. They are this: content and motivation and a delivery system that does not kill us as leaders. Here's the question. First one, what content should we teach parents? When I was first a parent and my son, firstborn Benjamin, was 4 months old, I did the parent sneak. You've done it too if you've had kids. It happens at night when your kid's asleep. And you tiptoe into the room. And you look at your child and you say, can you believe that? Or what? And it just caught me that night that as I was looking at my son and giving thanks to God that you have given me a child that's not mine, he's yours. You've trusted me to raise him for you. And I was thinking, 18 years is going to go by so fast. What do I do? What can I give him in those 18 years out of all the things I'd give him? I want to give him a relationship with the God who's trusted him to me. I want to speak blessing into him. And I was reading a book on blessing. So I said, with my hand on his back, and I said, Benjamin, I bless you to be strong and straight and true and brave. Now, you know why I said those words? I don't know either. They just popped in my mind. First thing they rhymed a little bit. I don't know. But I was thinking, what do I want him to look like after 18 years? And in leading him to the Lord and watching the Lord develop his character. Well, throughout his growing up, I spoke that blessing to him time and time again. He's second grade. He comes in the middle of the soccer game, and I'm his coach, and I don't know if I can go on. You know, it is 102 degrees, you know. It's okay. But take some water. And then I said, you take your time, but let me tell you, son, I believe in you. You know why? Because, Ben, you're strong and straight and true and brave. And he goes, yeah. And out he goes. And he's in early high school, and he goes out with his friends, and he has a date. And before he leaves, I say, Ben, I bless you. I bless you. You're the son of the king. And be strong and straight and true and brave. And we began to talk about what those words meant, strong and straight and true and brave. Strong in the Lord and straight in terms of being responsible, especially responsible for others. When he was in sixth grade, we had a father-son blessing, and I spoke that into him and talked about what it means to be to respect women, as we talked about what sexuality, what it means to be a man of God. True and brave, and we talked about making a stand, even when it's against what everyone else is saying is popular and cool. So, Wheaton College, 2005, Mom and Dad, goodness, unloaded him, and we came down, and you know, it's time to say goodbye. We're so proud of him, and the time's over. It's just over. And I said, Ben, I put my hand on him like I always do, and so did Cheryl. I said, Ben, and I go like that because I was doing this stupid thing. And he goes, I bless you. And he goes, strong and straight, true and brave. And it stuck. And after he went for Teach for America, after university and all that, after he, true and brave, brave guy, canoed down the Mississippi, idiot. He went on to Duke Divinity School. He's studying, actually being an Anglican priest. His own path, doesn't have to do what Dad did, and I bless him for it. I'm really proud of him. And he wrote me a letter. He wrote about his calling to the ministry, and he talked about the blessing that was spoken into his life through the years. And you know what that is? That's a vision for what God's given us to do. And we will not accomplish that on our own. That will only be done by the power of God. I believe that we need to teach parents this content. they need to speak blessing into their children. They need to bless their children. It needs to happen. They need to bless them at baptism or infant dedication, depending on the tradition. They need to bless them throughout the growing up years. And when they get to high school, they especially need to bless them. And that is one of the contents that we need to continually remind our parents that they've got a responsibility, that the years will go by fast. Their child is not their own. He is the Lord God Almighty's. And let us call upon His name placed on them, that He would shape them according to His design and their unique gifts. That's one thing we need. That's vision. Next thing is we need that mindset of being intentional, and that's because people say, I don't have enough time, and that's bogus. It's just they don't know how to be intentional. And now we're going to get into motivation a little bit later about how to help them become intentional. But if we're not continually reminding them, they will not become intentional. Because you know who needs reminding? I do too, don't you? On the stuff that really matters? I always need to be reminded about what really matters so I can become intentional on it. And then they also need to be trained about how to talk about God in real life ways, both in formal settings such as devotions and informal ways. Such as minivan, and the ambulance goes by. And you know when the ambulance goes by that it's time to stop and pray. And the kids pray like crazy because, God, would you use this circumstance to help people and let your healing power physically and spiritually be on people? Yes.
I call those teaching moments.
Teaching moments is perfect. Teaching moments is, they're life-shaping moments. Because that's where we learn to live, is it not? And parents are kids are watching parents, especially at crisis points. How do you handle this?
You know, it just popped into my head, too, that it's natural. That's a natural.
The challenge is going to be for lackadaisical Larry. That's true. Lackadaisical Larry, who's a member of your church, he's kind of on the outside, and he's the guy I want to win. Because I've won you. You've got a heart for the Lord, and you're ready to go. Show me how to do it. But I got to win lackadaisical Larry because he's intimidated. He's not used to talking about God. He only came to the Lord recently as an adult. And how does he make those everyday conversations real in his life? And that is the game breaker. We got to figure out how to do that. I've got some ideas about that. But there was one other point over here about the formal and informal settings, and that was the teenage years. And what happens very common in Christian homes is that devotions rock and roll during those 2, 3, 4, 5-year-olds. Man, we'll read the Bible. We're going to get up and act them out. We're going to sing and dance and shake all about. But in 8th grade, oh, man. You know. And that is another time that we need to rethink how we're going to deliver it in real life ways. They need it more than, as much then at least, as 2, 3, and 4-year-olds. So, those are some content questions. Now, I'm going to tell you a little bit more about content here. I think content should be key discipleship skills. And it's easy to discuss the discipleship skills in the early years that parents need to have. How to read the Bible, how to pray with your child. Use a picture Bible. Key discipleship skills, how a child, I want to teach a child, when do you teach a child to use their spiritual gifts? I think a good time is age 6. Getting ready for, they're feeling their oats, they're getting ready to go to 1st grade. And all that, and it's time for them to know that they are uniquely gifted. And what can they do? They can do a family mission trip in which they're going to do even something down the block that serves. And let's give them a devotion at home about Jesus washing feet because he washes our feet. And maybe the kid can wash mom and dad's feet. Maybe you can think of what can we do together to help other people. And wow, is that exciting when they come up to that. And by the way, when do you teach tithing? That's a good time. That's when they start getting allowances so they can learn to take out that 10 cents. And by the way, that's a good one for mom and dad to go, oop. Yeah, so I think that's a good time for that. When do you teach them to worship? I think 4-year-olds is what we targeted. 4-year-olds, let's teach them to sing. And let's teach them what worship looks like. And let's teach them to have a worship time when they're laying on their bed at night. So it's a safe time, too. Maybe you even make their own little worship altar. As a matter of fact, that's one of the things that we deliver. So they can do that. By the way, then they'd never let Dad get by without having that devotion. We get to light the candle, you know, and have that thing set up there. Read the Bible for yourself. We have a blessing. Now, what happens is, what we've done is that, and this has taken a course of 7 years of watching families do this, and we start plugging into discipleship skills along the way. And how do we deliver them? And one of them is their first Bible. We make a big deal about that. But when we give them their first Bible, we ask that moms and dads would first invite ask their relatives, what was your favorite Bible verse, Grandma? Let's underline it. Would you like to sign this Bible for them? You know, would you like to go ahead and say, this is mine? Or this is a verse that's special significant to you? And then we want to teach parents actually a little bit about the Bible and how to use their own Bible. So, because they're going to be teaching their kids about the Bible. Now, they always need to be learning how to have family devotions, right? Fifth and sixth grade, this is all about what it means to be a man of God or a woman of God. Father, son, mother, daughter, retreat. Let's go ahead and put them in a retreat together and teach them about God's gift of sex. Let's go countercultural. Let's make it fun for them, too. Now, when they're in the junior high and high school years, I think that the key discipleship skills are much more than family devotions. One of the best discipleship skills they have at seventh grade is learning how to honor mom and dad, how to have an honorable response when they disagree. And you know what mom and dad need to know more than anything? How to listen to their kids. And if we don't teach them, if we can teach them that, that's huge. That can reshape their whole teenage years because they're scared of what it could be like, because what if it's like their teenage years? And quiet time, eighth grade, ninth grade. What about dating? How do you choose a boyfriend, girlfriend, and what's appropriate? Do you kiss, not kiss? Hey, let's talk about this, mom and dad, because mom and dads aren't usually good about talking about this because it seems, well, you know what the lie is. None of the other parents make us, you know, we get to do what, you know, my other parents don't ever, other kids' parents don't make me come, you know, make their kids come home at this time, or they can watch this movie, and 10th grade, this one gets me. We save for college educations and all that, and we talk to our kids a little bit, sometimes, about what they want to do after high school. How many strong Christian parents say, have you prayed about where God is leading you after high school? I want to pray with you on that, because this is what I see about you, and I want that part of you to flourish. Wow, that's important. Or what about your first driver's license and that contract and freedom and talking about what's appropriate in your driving contract or drinking and those issues? Or are we only going to wait when we have a big mistake to talk about it? No, let's not. 11th grade, why wouldn't we talk then about what kind of spouse would you marry in the future? Why wouldn't we talk about that? How few parents actually ask that question? What are you looking for in a spouse? And that will that can change trajectories. And then how do we help them keep their faith after high school? Because less than 15% are. And in 12th grade, we really want to hone in on that. So, those are things that are important to me in terms of content. Now, there's other kinds of content out there. I just want us to say, hey, it's more than family devotions. It's talking about real life things. This is life to the full. Let's talk about it. Let's help our parents talk about it. That's a little bit about key discipleship skills. I am going to tell you one thing. Kirk Weaver's family time stuff, how many people use it? And you could have Kirk come up to your church. He would do a workshop that will rock your socks. he's a good friend. He writes, helps all the family time, and they are way cool, active family devotions. And W-E-A-V-E-R, and you can get his materials off of our website. You can contact him personally, and he'll come on up here. I was with him in November in Indonesia, and we were talking about this same family ministry. By the way, the rest of the world is struggling with this big time, too. And he was doing some of his samples for the Indonesian culture, which is so interesting how they just really lit up on it. Because they're first and second generation Christians. And they're wrestling with this. How do you talk about, how do you have, because in the modernization that's happening globally, the audience is getting tougher and tougher. So let's really engage our kids. And so they're just fun, active ways to learn the Bible together. Okay? Your suggestions. What are things we need to teach in discipleship skills? Donna?
In our church, there's actually a curriculum, too, that's out there that is addressing that. I'm not sure what the links to that, but for now it's at least planting those.
Oh, sure.
And D6 talks about those things, and they have web information that they email you every week. And that's a start. It's not exactly, I'm not effective it is, but it's a starting point and it's a tool. And and when I came to the block going into the grabbing both paths, God in his wisdom and timing had just the week before our lead path start, and even if it's not exactly what we want for our church at that point.
Thank you, Donna. And I'm going to move along because I've got 10 minutes and I'm going to get all the way through this time. Okay? How do we motivate parents? Here's what we do. At least once a month, we have all the parents who just went through a faith step, learning a discipleship skill for their kids. They come up to the front with their kids. They have a blessing object in their hand that's attached to their discipleship, such as First Picture Bible 2-year-olds. And they get down on their knees, and as they hand that Bible to their 2-year-old, and we've already talked to the 2-year-olds, the pastors up there, and the rest of the congregation prays for them while they're doing it. And then they speak blessing into their kid's life as they pass them the 2-year-old the Bible. Now what's happening there is this is a sacred moment. And the whole church says, this is really important. We are behind parents blessing their children. And they're teaching them the Bible. And I tell you, I've had so many parents, first of all, I very seldom see these events without tears coming down parents' face. And I want lackadaisical Larry, because if faithful Mary is sitting next to him in the pew, and he's not there, and he has a 2-year-old, and he gets this, and their kid says, why can't we be up there? I'm going to get him next time. Because we have them happening all the time. We want it to be part of the culture. So when they see it there, it's one thing to see it, but you're also praying for them. It's a spiritual issue. We need to take spiritual resources and pray and bless as a congregation families that are intentionally doing it. And then make it so easy that lackadaisical Larry can say, you know, I think I could probably do that. And he's going to see some other guys he can relate to. And that's a big part of the motivational question. Because as we aim at the fathers, the way to do that is to help the dads have conversations together with other dads. Now, the way we do this is in the elementary years, we have parents in every, well, what we have is we have faith steps. At birth, 2-year-olds, 4-year-olds, 6, 8, and then 5th, 6th grade, and all the early years, they are 3 sessions, parents together. Three sessions. Ha! 3 sessions. Parents together, kids aren't with them. Ah! And what happens is, while they're in those sessions, they're video-led. Every 12 minutes, after the video section happens, it stops with a question, and they discuss it in groups of three or four. So now dads get to talk to other dads. And the way that we deliver discipleship today, folks, is not just more information bombardment. It's all about relationships. And when a dad begins to talk with another dad about it, he says, oh, I can do that. And there are a couple parents that get to be champions of it in these groups. And in these groups, we do not have any professional church workers. They're all led by parent advocates. And it's a social thing because they all have parents the same age. So it begins to kind of work. No, dads and moms together. But the dads are going to relate to other dads. And singles are there too. Single parents and spiritually single too. So it's still groups three or four. That's pretty important just because we want more talking. And we'll give you plenty of content. So, and a session would last an hour to an hour and a half. You get to shape it by whatever you want. During the first years of preschool and elementary ages, it's three sessions. Now you're with your kids in fifth and sixth grade in a father-son or mother-daughter retreat. Because that's when we want to deal with the sex topic. And then during high school, your schedules change. Parents need to be with their kids at the event. But you couldn't get three sessions. Because they could never get three sessions in a row. So it's one night, Sunday night seminar, or Wednesday night seminar. All parents and that age group teen together. And they learn that ministry skill. And we just have one coming up. We're filming our last one. Next, I don't know, two, three weeks from now. Have you heard of Chap Clark? Sticky Faith? He's our presenter. He's tremendous. We get really good speakers who are filmed, and then they do the breakout talks then the parents and their children do the breakout talks together around those same topics that I talked about. The time expectations will tell you who's going to be at the training event. I could have a 15-week course on spiritual training, but I'm only going to get the spiritual giants. So let's aim and try to get lackadaisical Larry. It's kind of the way we designed it anyway. So that's a little bit about how we motivated them. And what really motivates them at those training events are when they hear from one another. It does not take an expert up front or an inspirational sermon. However, the pastor needs to be on board and saying, this is important. This is all the parents' job and the church's job behind them. So, the last thing is the delivery system. And this is what you were talking about, Donna, is how do you ever deliver this? And here's the practical side of it. In my church, we're pretty well staffed. I've got a director of family ministry that I have worked with, and I called him there so we could write this thing together. So we've been on it for like 8 years and been filming and all these things. There's no way we could implement it with even all the staff that we have without us doing it full-time all the Sundays. It would kill us. And that's the problem about faith at home nurture, because how do you get to all these? And that's because we try to make ourselves the expert. I say, why not we, as leaders, raise up advocates and give them a mission together and a vision to say this is important? So the way we suggest this is implemented, it only takes about 5 hours out of the staff person for the year if it's done this way. And I can talk to you more about this later on, but just so you catch the principles, even if you don't use the materials that we have, which is called Faith Legacy Series. It, first of all, involves that one leadership meeting when you're going to have with the pastor and the faith team leader, the faith step team leader. And you're saying, do we want to make this important? And if that's the case, then who would be a parent in each of these age groups that we'd like to ask to be part of this system? And let them be advocates. Let's pray through that list. Let's make it the NFL draft or the NHL draft, I should say, and then let's go ask them, and then we make those individual asks so that 2 weeks later, They all come together and they say, okay, we're going to tell you what we're asking. We have a meeting together. We even put that meeting online so we make it really simple about explaining, this is what we're going to ask you to do. This is how the whole system fits together. This is what your time commitment is going to be. You're going to be in the month of September. You're in October. You're in November. You're going to be on this date and that date. So it fits together in the whole church calendar. And now think about that. Pray about that for a week. We'll be back with you. Then you see who's with you. Usually you get them all. But then you say, we have one more session, and that's training. And in the training session, we talk about how do you invite other parents. And you also are the one who does all the duplication of materials. You do the ordering of the blessing objects, some of which you make there with your team. You might build your own faith chest. We have faith chests that families build at baptism or infant dedication, baptism in our case. And they build, at session four of their baptism class, they build their own faith chest. So every baptism, the faith chest is there, and we talk about the treasure of faith and how we're investing in it. And then the fathers speak a blessing over their children, over their child at that event. Now, that's in our tradition, and other traditions would do it at infant dedication. We have six versions of denominational differences because on the issue of infant baptism or infant dedication, there's this much variety. Everything else, guess what, folks, is the same. As far as spiritual parenting, so at baptism or at birth step, session three, which teaches whatever your denomination teaches, you just pick that one up. You know, but you're still going to have a faith chest built, and you're still going to speak a blessing. So that's a little bit about the delivery system that empowers the people. Now, if you're interested in more about that system, that is called the Faith Legacy System, and here's a brochure on it and a video on it, and you can stop at the Kids Count booth on it. However, it's not just about that system. It's about those principles. So wherever you are, hold up those principles and let your congregation shape it to what fits and works for you. If you have any questions after the session, please come talk to me. And I would appreciate it and welcome it. Let's close in prayer. Lord, at the beginning of the day, we prayed for that encouragement that we would have that comes from you. You know our hearts, and you know how we do seek to serve you with all of who we are, our heart, our soul, our strength, our mind. You know, Lord, our flaws. You know our struggles and even our discouragements. Oh, Lord, thank you that this day you have breathed in by your Holy Spirit more of your truth. And that very clear message that says, keep on. All authority in heaven and earth has been given to me. So keep on. You go make disciples of all people, especially children. Teach them. Baptize them. Lord, Lord, you tell us that even to the ends of the earth, you will be with us. And so may it be. Let us, until our final breath, be found faithful to your calling. In Jesus' name.